And we are joined by Mr. Richard Dan. I should say Captain Richard Dan. And, oh, here we go. I think that was Master Chief Communications Specialist Dave Nagel. Is that anywhere near correct?
Close enough.
Close enough. Okay.
Okay. We didn't burger.
He will
it
be
bad.
Someday.
Short attention span. What can I say?
Yeah. Too many distractions around here.
And you guys are here to talk about the Navy Centennial of Flight.
That's correct. We started flying airplanes in the Navy 100 years ago this year. In fact, the first airplane was delivered to the Navy on July 1st, 1911, in Hammondsport, New York, believe it or not. Upstate New York on the Finger Lakes.
Nice.
So it sounds like the Navy was kind of an early adopter at that point.
Well, it took a little doing. When Glenn Curtis finally got the Navy to do experiments with airplanes, we took a Curtis pusher and we flew it off the bow of the USS Birmingham that had a temporary deck affixed to it. And the Navy Department looked at that and said, that's interesting and nice, but I want an airplane that can actually land next to a ship and then be hoisted aboard, put back in the water. So 2 months later, Glenn Curtis and his pilot Eugene Ely did another thing, and this is in January 1911. They landed aboard the USS Pennsylvania in San Francisco Bay. So we proved we could take off in November, land in January. But the Navy, again, still wasn't really convinced that this thing was of practical value. So Glenn Curtis in San Diego Bay in February 1911 takes another one of his Curtises, lands next to the Pennsylvania, which is a battleship. They hoist him aboard. They put him back in the water, and he taxis away. But that was the key to selling the airplane to the Navy.
Well, that's very interesting because the airplane has played a pivotal role in many, many wars that we've been in. Specifically, the turning point for us in the Pacific War in World War II was the Battle of Midway.
Well, that's true, but you can go back even further. Our first combat operations were off of Veracruz, Mexico in 1914.
But what did they see? They didn't see the airplane as an attacking machine at that point.
That's correct. That didn't come along till World War II. Our aha moment with the airplane really came in 1929 during a fleet problem, what they call a fleet problem, where we finally convinced ourselves we could use the aircraft carrier as an offensive capability, not just an adjunct to the battleship.
Now, the interesting thing you said, though, Glenn Curtis actually flew off the ship. So he was already thinking of an aircraft carrier type concept while the Navy was going, no, we want it to land in the water.
Right, and that was actually Eugene Ely. Glenn Curtis built the airplanes
and tried to push
the concept.
Mm-hmm. So he was forward-thinking and beat the Navy there on that one.
Well, Glenn Curtis is a very interesting fellow, and he did a lot of inventing, primarily with motorcycles, gasoline engines, and then later on, believe it or not, he literally invented the Airstream camper and the twist grip throttle for the motorcycle. And the turnbuckle.
We owe a lot to Glenn Curtis then.
Much more than we think.
Well, that's interesting, though. But when did the Navy put it all together and say, you know, holy cow, this, you know, landing on a ship, taking off a ship, this is interesting?
Well, we finally were able to convince the powers that be in 1922 to take a converted coal ship called the Jupiter and put a deck on it. And that was our first aircraft carrier. It was the USS Langley, CV-1, commissioned 1922, and then the first landings and takeoffs from that ship took place later in 1922.
Now, these were guys that have never tried to land on board ship before. How did they do?
Well, I'll tell you, it's...
Some did, some didn't.
That's correct, and you saw a lot of nose-overs and things like that, but like anything, a new concept, a new technology, you have to overcome the difficulties with it, and, you know, by... 2011, I think we're pretty darn good with our capability. You know,
we can
literally pinpoint the wire we want to catch with our tail hooks and get it.
Well, that brings up a question right to my mind. When was the tail hook concept devised in the landing wires?
Well, it happened in January 1911 with Curtis and the Ely.
He was already thinking of using a tail hook and a wire.
Well, for folks that are going to come to AirVenture, the Curtis pusher that Bob Coolbaugh built matches the one that landed on the Pennsylvania. Now, his airplane actually has the hooks on it, so you can go out and look at his airplane and see how those hooks were installed. But they were installed on the bottom of the undercarriage, the wheel carriage on that airplane, and they used sea bags, 22 sea bags, stretched across that deck on Pennsylvania. And he caught the 11 wire. Eugene Ely caught the 11 wire. So, you know, nowadays it's the 3 wire, but back then it was the 11 wire was pretty good.
Any wire was pretty good back then.
Exactly. As they said 9 times, if we can do this 9 times out of 10, we're pretty good. But we like to do it 100% of the time these days.
Well, then you guys got, you went off the other end of the scale and you were landing all sorts of weird things on airplanes, like, or on ships. I mean, like C-130s.
Yeah, that took place. That was Jimmy Flatley III, who later retired as an admiral. He landed a C-130 on the USS Forrestal, I believe, in 1961, and he did it 19 times. He didn't do it once. And the way they actually made that happen was by taking the weight on wheel switch, which is a common thing on bigger airplanes, that deactivates and activates systems that when you leave the ground. And so they deactivated the weight on wheel switch to the propeller reversers. They went into reverse or beta before they ever touched down.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's how they're
scary.
And you say he did this 19 times?
Correct.
And I'll bet he walked away from airplanes after that.
And it's funny because the nose art on the airplane was, "Look, Ma, no hook." Oh, he did it without a hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I understand that he wrote a report that basically said, "I can do this, but nobody else."
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And he didn't recommend it because the clearance to the superstructure
so close.
Was too tight.
Yeah, they had to make a special cheat line, which is the one you can't go over.
Right.
So,
well, I'm sure that they had a way of lining him up on the carrier, too, on his approach.
They did.
With six, I believe it was like 6 feet of clearance he had between the island and the wingtip.
It wasn't much.
No, that's about the width of this studio. And that's
wow.
Pretty tight.
This looks bigger than 6 feet. But anyway, we digress. So what's the Navy got planned for here? Do you guys know any of those questions?
I'd like to get Senior Chief Nagel involved in this, too, so I'm going to pass this over to him.
Okay. Well, we have several aircraft that will be participating this week. A lot of the modern aircraft with the what we call a retro paint scheme, you know, painted out to look like Navy aircraft from years past. As you can see, a lot of that. We have a Centennial of Navy Aviation booth set up over here at ConocoPhillips Plaza, so folks can come and stop by and check us out there.
Brain lock. Did I hear that you have a Curtiss replica here?
Bob Coolbaugh, based on our discussions we had about if you build it, they will come, about 3 years ago, built this pusher. The airplane was in Michigan this weekend for the Thunder Over Michigan show, and he left immediately after his flight. In fact, he didn't land yesterday. He continued on, but it's a 9-leg journey.
Wow.
So it's en route.
55 knots, so it's en route, and there was weather. So actually, they had predicted weather near Chicago, but when we drove through yesterday, it was okay. But that airplane, at the latest, should be here tomorrow.
So that was the next question would be that you're obviously going to fly it.
Bob has been working with the EA folks here. Yes, it will fly. He'll fly it as much as the EA allows him.
That's very good.
It's a fascinating airplane. And one of the things about Curtiss airplanes, do you know how they control the Wright airplanes with the wing warping?
Yeah. Right.
Well, Glenn Curtiss built motorcycles. So what do you do when you turn a motorcycle?
You lean.
Exactly. So what he did is he built an apparatus called a shoulder yoke that was attached to the seat that pivoted laterally. And that turned his ailerons. The wheel, the control wheel, was your rudder, and then elevators were standard, and the power was a gas pedal.
Oh, geez.
So that's how he controlled the airplanes, and that was actually common in his airplanes probably till about 1914, and then there was some issues with people flying Wrights and Burgesses and Curtisses where they were getting into trouble. So they went to a standard control, which is what we fly today, ailerons and stuff. And it's literally Glenn Curtiss and Alexander Graham Bell invented the aileron. And the reason that it's between the wings on a Curtiss is because of the litigation lawsuits with the Wrights.
Right.
It wasn't attached to the wing, so therefore it wasn't wing warping.
So they got around that.
They got around it, yeah.
Now that's an interesting piece of trivia.
Yeah, there was quite a battle between the Wrights and Glenn
Curtiss.
Well,
that I know, but
there sure was.
I didn't know that's why he put them there.
That's unique. So he's going to have this airplane here. They're going to fly it. And I think I have seen this. I think it was up at Reading back at the beginning of June. So I believe I saw the airplane there. And they flew it there, too. And from what I have seen, read, and talked to people about, the thing's a handful to fly.
It is. When he first built it, he had the controls linked up in such a way that when he got above 55 knots, those big ailerons out there were billboards, you know. And so when he tried to turn the airplane, it was very difficult. He would come back from the flights with just aching shoulders. So they re-rigged the controls with a little bit more moment to them. And it flies much better, but it's still a terrible flying airplane.
Yeah.
They all were back then.
Well, you figure, what, it was 1914? Aerodynamics was very much a black art back then.
It was.
That's funny, and they probably thought it was, well, this is the best flying airplane I've ever flown.
And nowadays, you look at what we have with the F-18s and everything, it's just incredible.
All right, this is Digital Dave. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back with Captain Richard Dan and Dave Nagel, Senior Chief, I believe you said.
Correct.
And this is the AA Radio.